The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness. All
aboard! Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 80. I'm Victor Nuno. I'm one of the co-hosts here. With me, Peter Harling. How are you doing, Pete? Can you imagine? Can you believe we've done 80 of these?
Yeah, I think I had over 100 under my belt before we rebranded at DPR show. So that is a lot, man. We've been doing this for just over a year now. I was just going back through our old show notes looking to rehash some ideas. And yeah, 80 episodes, man. People still listen to this. That's crazy.
At least one or two people. So well,
that's yeah, cool. This episode's going to be proof of that.
Yeah, man. Things are going well, and we got a good topic for this episode. We're going to explain it a little bit more later, but we are going to talk about some player evaluations that maybe we didn't quite get all the way right. And it's a good exercise for us to learn from, and hopefully the discussion will be fruitful. This episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for all the great hockey podcasts, and use your DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. And we're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league. Even though we've already started the NHL season, you can still do all these kinds of things, and you can use draft pick, trading, treasure option, all that kind of stuff. Even if you're doing non-hockey leagues, I don't know why you'd do that, but you could. Use the promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. So Pete, why don't you tell us a little bit more about how we came up with the idea for this episode.
Yeah, man. So, you know, last week after our episode, you and I were both kind of scratching our bald heads about what can we talk about next week. And I think you had the good idea of saying, why don't we just throw it out to a listener question? So I posted it on Twitter and we got some responses. So this week's episode comes from listener Matt Casada on Twitter at Matt80380. Sounds like an AI bot. Hopefully he's a real person. He answered our call for show ideas with this topic suggestion. Matt says, I always find it interesting to hear analysts talk about mistakes they've made in evaluations and what they learned from those mistakes. What have been some of your biggest learnings from the last 3 to 4 years? Well, Matt, there's a lot of material we could go into this episode because I can't speak for Victor, but I've made a lot of mistakes. And hopefully I've learned a little bit about it over the years. So we each picked about 3 or 4 guys. I guess we'll take turns as we usually do, Victor, and go over some of our guys. Since you're on mute, I'll lead. I'll start off with Ben Goodrow. He's a 20-year-old goalie. He's 6'2". He was drafted 7th overall in the OHL draft in 2019. I watched him play live a couple of times in the OHL. He's in the West. I live in the East, so you know, once or twice a year on TV a couple times and such. And he looked large in goal. He's got lightning fast feet. Positionally, I thought he was excellent. He read and anticipated plays very well, and he looked like he was in control at all times. One of the things I liked about Carey Price was he didn't look like he had to work hard to make saves like 95% of the time. He was, and then those 5% times where he was scrambling, he looked athletic and yet still in control, even though it was, a lunging save or a desperation flail of the foot or the arm or whatever. And so Goodrow kind of reminded me a lot of that playing style and just inspired confidence in his goaltending ability. I thought he's a surefire NHL starting goalie at worst and an elite franchise goalie, best case scenario. And unfortunately for me, he kind of stopped trending up. When he peaked at the U18s for Canada in his draft year, he helped Canada win the gold medal. He was awarded the goalie of the tournament in that year as well. And then he was drafted in 2021 by the Calgary Flames in the third round, 81st overall. Wait, was it Calgary?
No, it was San Jose.
San Jose. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, drafted by San Jose. 81st overall. I had him projected for a first round pick for me. Only Craig Button did too at 31. Bob McKenzie had him ranked as low as 69. In the latter seasons of his OHL career, he stopped trending up and kind of started to struggle, kind of flatlined. Some of his games were great, some of the games were terrible. His goals against average overall wasn't particularly spectacular. He was returned for his overage season, which is kind of a red flag. He played five OHL seasons and he had a career record of 75, 45, and 12 with a 353 goals against average and 890 save percentage and 151 career games. He won more than he lost, but his goals against average, 3.53, is not awe-inspiring to say the least, right? Was not signed by San Jose, who drafted him, not Calgary. He went back into the NHL draft and was passed over in his redraft. He was invited to some NHL rookie camps, Tampa Bay for sure. I can't remember if there was a second one or not. Didn't earn a contract, of course. He's currently playing in the ECHL. He's still only 21 years old, but he's certainly not trending towards the NHL at all. And my early evaluations of him were way off. I was way too high on this guy, and he just stopped developing. He didn't pan out at all. So what did I learn from this experience? Well, I could say the same thing about a lot of goalies. The same lesson I keep learning whenever I draft goalies: stop drafting goalies. They're voodoo. That's pretty much it. See the long list of guys who fall on this criteria for me. I'm talking Dryden McKay, Keith Petrozzulli, Veni Vähälinen, Mikey DiPietro, Tyler Parsons, Jeremy Helvig, and so on and so on. They all looked so good at junior level, but just never really developed. Some of these guys might yet kind of pan out a little bit. I'm still holding a modicum of hope for Keith Petrozzulli, but that's about it. Maybe Mikey DiPietro too. But drafting goalies when they're 18 years old, they require so much more development and so much can go wrong. Just wait, acquire goalies in another means, signing them as free agents, picking them off their waiver wire, making trades for players who you know are NHL goalies. So much can change so fast with them, as we've seen from year to year. Bad teams, good teams, changing of coaching, it can all impact a goalie's fantasy value. So I just don't really love drafting 18-year-old goalies anymore, Victor. What do you think about my Ben Goodrow experience?
Well, I don't think it was unique to you. I think a lot of people messed up on Ben Goodrow, so I definitely think it was a really tricky evaluation, right? I mean, I think you kind of glossed over that fact a little bit, but I think it was huge that he missed that whole draft season. That was really a difficult evaluation. He missed all his OHL time, that is. He did play in the U18s and he was great. So, you're talking small sample size. I think it's always tricky. How do we evaluate these tournaments? On the one hand, they're super important because they're best on best, and you see you can learn a lot about what makes them tick and how they can handle that pressure and all that kind of stuff, I think can be so valuable. But also you can overweight it, and I think this is a case where for Gaudreau, I think that was a classic example of a lot of us overrated that really great U18s. And I think some people said it at the time, and the reality is that that U18 Canada team probably could have won with a lot of people in net, right? Like
Yeah.
they that was a really good team. So
Well, he
did they?
won goalie of the tournament. So that was a huge feather in his cap. The other one was he was seventh overall pick in OHL, right? So he entered the league with a high pedigree and hit the ground running as a rookie and was great at the U18s, like all signs pointing up like this is going to be a really great goalie. And then he just stopped trending in that direction. It's pretty tragic for my fantasy team at least.
Yeah, and you'd seen him, live a little bit. I think sometimes those viewings sometimes can sometimes be misleading, that we're all subject to that. And I remember I saw him at one of the Sharks rookie camps, and I remember thinking at the time, like, he really didn't look that good. But I was kind of just chalking it up to like, okay, this is like rookie tournament and all these guys have never played together and like who knows. I wasn't really making much of it, but I think that was kind of the beginning of he, succeeded to kind of stink it up in the OHL after that for several seasons and then kind of trend down, as you pointed out. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things where sometimes you can really overrate that small sample size. And I'm just looking at that U18 team from Canada. And yeah, Shane Wright, Connor Bedard, Mason McTavish, Logan Stankoven, Olin Zellweger, Dylan Gunther, Brant Clark, Brennan Othman, White Johnston. Like that team was insane. So
Not bad.
not bad. So I mean, I think you were it was kind of a whiff, but I think it was a whiff for a lot of people. I think there were a lot of circumstances where it kind of led you awry, led a lot of us awry. And the fact that he missed that whole year in the OHL, maybe we would have had a different picture. If, like, say, for example, he had a very average OHL season and just a good tournament, we would have been like, maybe he's not that exciting. Maybe he just had one good tournament. Whereas we just didn't know. And all we remembered of him was that one tournament. And it took a long time to not remember that or unlearn that thought about him.
Yeah, I mean, he did play for Canada again at the World Juniors and was pretty unspectacular there too. That's when I started to get really concerned. Who's your first guy?
Oh man, this was a big one. Juuso Välimäki was my first one. And yeah, he was one that he was pretty an interesting one. 16th overall back in 2017 by the Calgary Flames. I certainly didn't follow the draft classes as closely as I do now back in 2017, so I didn't watch him that, closely then. He was billed as a mobile defender, good offensive instincts, high IQ. He came up in the Liga system, but then he came to North America for both his D minus one and D zero. Juuso Välimäki looked great in his draft season for the Tri-City Americans. He was just over a point per game. Then his D plus one was a little unspectacular, but he didn't show massive growth, but he was kind of similar. In hindsight, that lack of growth with the whole team taking a step back, maybe would have made you think a little bit more, but he was good for Finland at the U20 World Junior Championship, 4 points in five games. 2018-19, he played half of the Flames and half of the Stockton Heat of the AHL. And in that small sample size, his NHL play driving was poor, but his offense was nothing special. And his defense was a bit of a liability. So that was the first kind of like, oh, what's going on here? But you're talking about a relatively small sample size of 24 NHL games. So you're kind of, maybe not trying to panic too much, but there are some signs there already. That was kind of the first red flag for me. But at that point, his PNHLE was still, relatively high. It was like around 50. So there were still some signs pointing to like, okay, he could still be decent. And then the next season, 19-20, he lost the entire season. He tore his ACL in off-season training. It was really terrible. Brutal derailment of his development. Then there was the COVID season, and he went over to Liga. And this is where I think I really messed up because he played for Ilves in the Liga and he had 19 points in 19 games. And I was like, damn, this guy is gonna, he's back. He's got it. He's, you know, everything we thought he could be, kind of circling back to that high draft pedigree, and he could be really good. So that was probably a mistake. I look back on those, and 17 of those 19 points were assists. 9 of those 17 assists were secondary. That's a bit too high of a number, if you really think about it. That information is a little bit hard to get, but I could have found that if I really looked hard and really was scrutinizing those points a little bit more. Then he came over to the NHL and his production was much more modest with the Flames, 11 points in 49 games. The offense was a little bit better, but he really struggled defensively. And if you look under the hood, the expected goals numbers weren't, you know, great. The defense was still an issue, and his mobility seemed to really struggle a little bit. So I think the big lesson for me is not to weigh too much that Liga production and maybe look a little bit more closely at where the points came from. Was he really generating that? Because it didn't look like he actually was in hindsight. And you look at that class, that 2017 class, to me, this was a really big learning point because you had Heiskanen and Makar at 3 and 4th overall, 3rd and 4th overall, and those guys are studs any way you want to look at it. Although maybe Heiskanen isn't too much of a fantasy producer, but they're great. Then there was a big gap till the next defenseman. Cal Foote was taken 16th. Maybe some people forget about him. And he's an NHLer, not anyone too excited. Then you had the offensive defenseman, Erik Brännström, Yusuf Alimäki, and Timothy Liljegren. All three of those guys did not live up fully to their potential, I would say. There was a bit more hype about them. Valimaki is the one who's kind of resurrected his career the most, I would say, and been and pretty respectable, at least contributor to his team. Brännström still trying to hack it in Vancouver, and Liljegren, maybe there'll be another chapter in San Jose with the recent trade. I think there might be, but we still don't know. But I think for me, the big lesson also was these offensive defensemen, whose offense is pretty good in the junior or minor leagues, but not amazing, and their defense is suspect. You have to be pretty cautious about that because if they can't hack it at even strength enough, they're never going to fully translate that potential. And I think that was the case a little bit for Valimäki. I was just looking at his hockey prospecting, and he was like 73%. He graduated the model at 73% chance of being a star, and he clearly is not, I would say. Although his NHLer probability was high, and he is. So at least that part was right. But yeah, some lessons learned, some whiffs there. What are your thoughts or read on Valimäki there, Pete?
Yeah, well, we're together on this one too, man, because I had him in one of my fantasy leagues as well. And I held on to him and I held on to him and I held on to him. And then I traded him away for very, pennies to the dollar. And then right after that, he got traded to Arizona and went from having 18 points in 35 games to 34 points in 78 games. And that was probably as good as he's going to be because he's been trending back down pretty hard since then. But I'm also kind of with you on some of those other guys that you just mentioned there as well. I was super high on Erik Brännström. That's a guy that could have been on my list. Me and everyone else's. I remember on trade deadline day when the Sens traded Mark Stone to Vegas. And Bob McKenzie on TV said that this is a prospect who's in the same class as guys like Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes. And that just hasn't panned out, obviously. Timothy Liljegren was at the start of his draft year in the top three or five kind of rankings on a lot of the preliminary lists. And he slipped a little bit, made it all the way down to wherever the Leafs got him in the late teens or early 20s. So I don't know if any of these guys are gonna really pan out there, Victor. Cal Foote was one that I was never really too keen on for fantasy purposes. I thought he was would be a better real life player than a fantasy player. It's turned out to be true, although neither values are particularly high. What can you do?
Yep, you're right about that.
All right. So let's look at another guy. Who can we pick on now? Oh, one of my faves, Ben Myers. He got on my radar in his junior season at the University of Minnesota as their captain, where he had 41 points in 34 games. He was the hottest NCAA free agent that season. He finished the year playing, or not finished the year, but he played for USA at the Olympics and then finished the year at the World Championships for USA. And in those two tournaments combined, he played 14 games and had 12 points. Now, the World Championships and the Olympics, that's not junior games. Those are against pro players and NHL players in a large capacity. And, 12 points in 14 games, yeah, man, I'm in. He won the Hobey Baker that year as well as the top player in the NCAA. And I had some, and not live, but I did have a bunch of viewings of him that season as well, watching him in TV and the tournament, the Frozen Four. And with Team USA and the international events. And so I was really sold on him. What I liked about Ben Myers, Victor, was he wasn't the biggest guy, right? But he had hockey sense, playmaking. And despite being 5'11", he still had some strength at 194 pounds. So he could play a physical game. Like he wasn't a wrecking ball out there, but he could go into the corner and hold his own and, one hand on the stick, control the puck and use the other hand to keep the defense or the checker at bay. Like he was winning board battles, and just his playmaking ability and his clutch sense for timing and goal scoring and setting up and creating offensive chances really resonated with me. And he was a 200-foot player. He was the player the coach would put in any situation, late in the game, defensive zone faceoffs, late in the game needing a goal, offensive zone faceoffs. He was the guy. He was signed by Colorado, which was another thing that I really liked. They're a very good team with a very shallow prospect pool. So, they've got some high-end players making fat stacks, so they need guys on entry-level contracts to fill out their roster and be compliant with the salary cap. And with little competition for prospects, I saw this as a great opportunity for him to break into the NHL in a middle six role and possibly play his way into a top six role in Colorado. Gravy. He played 39 games in his NHL rookie season and had 4 goals and no assists. Wah, wah. 53 points in 68 career AHL games, though. So, he can produce at the American Hockey League level, but just not at the NHL level. I drafted him in my fantasy draft in 2022, expecting to get an immediate player I could roster with a first round pick. I picked him 14th overall right after Rutger McGroarty. The next few picks, Victor, you ready for this?
Oh
15
boy.
were, yeah. 15 was Ivan Miroshenchenko. 16 was a forfeit. 17 was Andrei Kuzmenko. 18 was David Juracek. Oof. 19 was Yuri Kulich. 20 was Nick Blankenberg. I probably could have picked Nick Blankenberg too. He fits my motto. 21 was Isaac Howard. 22 was Brad Lambert. He was on my do not draft list. 23 was Liam Ogren. And the final pick to close out the first round, this one hurts me the most, Jimmy Snuggerud. So what did I learn from this, Victor? I keep targeting NCAA and European free agents, hoping to snag the next Artemi Panarin or Tyler Bozak, and it never pans out. I will never spend that kind of draft capital on an NCAA free agent again. I'll still draft them, but we're looking like later in the second, maybe third rounds at best now. I'm not spending a top 14 pick on an NCAA free agent player. That ship has sailed. That's what I learned. Too little, too late, huh?
Yeah, that one hurts. Although it seems like a lot of people wait whiffed on Snuggerud and Juracek. That's really late for him. Wow.
Yeah, well, defensemen, their value in this league is a little bit lower. Anyhow, but yeah, like there's some other guys that are in there. Andrei Kamenko was a European free agent signing, and Nick Blankenberg was another NCAA free agent player. So I wasn't the only one wasting draft picks. Kuzmenko panned out pretty good, though.
Yeah, I think that, this is someone who I've always not to say like I got him right, but I think I have less sensitivity and less in I've always had less interest in guys like this. This is more, I think, your kryptonite or had been, and it was a little bit harder for you to resist that. But you know, I think this is one of the things where some of these models actually do a really good job, because when you look at Myers, yes, he did really well at the University of Minnesota, but he was actually an older NCAA player when he got there. And so I often say that production in those levels, when you're a freshman or a sophomore, is a really big deal. But when you're a 20-year-old, you're a little bit older and you're getting, you know, closer to that point per game level, it's a little less impressive. So when you look at the statistical models for Ben Myers, they never showed him to be anything exciting. And I think that that's, you know, I think that that's a little bit more helpful in terms of putting it in perspective. Like, yes, he's doing good now, but what is his projection going to be at the NHL level? And most of those projected him to be a 30 to 40 point player, which he is maybe not even that, but he's closer to realistic of, you know, maybe not getting too excited about that. So it's hard, but I often say, you know, with these AHL, NCAA, and these different, you know, higher level leagues, don't get too excited about players who do really well if they're older, 22, 23. That tends not to translate super well. So he was someone, when people were kind of losing their mind, I was always like not interested in Ben Myers. So
All
that
right,
one
who's your next player?
was less of an issue for me, but I understand the reason why you'd be interested in him. My next one is Kalen Addison. Kalen Addison, 53rd overall by the Pittsburgh Penguins. He was eventually moved to Minnesota and then San Jose. That 2018 draft was pretty ripe with high-end defenders. We talked about the 18, the 22, and the 24 drafts being good for defenders, but the names that came out of that 2018 draft are kind of bonkers. Dahlin went 1, Hughes was 7, Bouchard at 10, Noah Dobson at 12, Keandre Miller at 22. There were some good ones, but there were a lot of defensemen in that draft. Some of the whiffs were Adam Boqvist at 8, Ty Smith at 18, Ryan Merkley at 21. I wonder how excited the Rangers were when the Sharks took Ryan Merkley at 21 and they laughed their way to the stage to take Keandre Miller. I think they knew what a stud he was back then. Anyways, this isn't a Trash the Sharks episode or Ryan Merkley. It just happened that way. Kalen Addison in his draft season for Lethbridge of the WHL was nearly a point per game. Then in his draft plus one, he was kind of similar to the same point total. Then he finally got to point per game in his draft plus two season. And I think in hindsight, that lack of progression in the WHL should have been a bit of a sign. The fact that he was roughly similar in his three seasons for Lethbridge in terms of the point pace. At the time, I was kind of thinking like, okay, but he's still, you know, doing really well in terms of his WHL production, but the lack of progression should have been a big red flag. The other thing I think I fell victim to is that, you know, it's been a while now where the Pittsburgh prospect pool has been awful. And for a long time, it was Kalen Addison, Samuel Poulin, and a lot of people, me included, were thinking, well, these guys have all their opportunity in the world because there's no one else in their system. And one of the things I learned from this example in particular is it doesn't matter. They can get traded and go somewhere else. And it really depends on how good that player is. The best players are going to rise to the cream. They're going to be the cream of the crop. They're going to rise to the occasion, regardless of what system they're in. He got moved to Minnesota. I thought, okay, now he can really show who he is. And his first season with the Wild was the 2020-21 season, COVID shortened. He was mainly in the AHL, 22 points in 31 games. I was like, okay, that's sort of promising. You know, maybe there's some optimism here. Then in 21-22, he got 15 games and had 4 points in the NHL. Not super exciting, but some pretty good AHL production again. I look at some of the underlyings that he had with like his Rampom charts and his through evolving hockey. And it wasn't really until 22-23 when he got an honest shot with the Wild and he put up nearly half point per game. But you look at some of the metrics and he got insanely lucky on the power play, which is pretty much the only way they were using him in a really sheltered role. His defensive metrics were poor and he wasn't really creating anything at even strength. He was pretty much a liability. So he's showed in his NHL time at that point that he was a real liability to his team. He needed to be sheltered. He needed to be protected. And he also showed that his offense really wasn't that special. The other thing I did is went back and looked at that Iowa Wild team that he was a part of when he showed some promise. And this team, I wouldn't say was massively stacked or anything, but they had some clear NHLers like Marco Rossi was there, Mason Shaw, Mitchell Chafee, who's been a part of the Lightning Association now, Dakota Mermis, who you've seen with Toronto, played some NHL games now, Connor Dewar, Matt Boldy. There's some names here, some guys that were they were decent, you know, so they were able to help insulate and support him. And I think that that was really important in context. And maybe I didn't think enough about that. So, and I also looked more closely. I didn't at the time, but his, even though he scored a lot, his Corsi and Fenwick were good, but I don't know that he was a part of that because his net expected goals was pretty terrible. And so were his Fenwick and Corsi against. He was getting caved in defensively in the AHL, but he was still scoring based on his offensive opportunities. So it's kind of a bit of a chaotic picture. And I think if you, if I look closely enough, the signs were there that defensively, Addison was never going to be good enough. And his offense wasn't really so special that it was going to forgive some of those defensive, lack of defensive ability. Well, I eventually came around to this, but not nearly soon enough. And what is Kalen Addison doing now? Anyone? Anyone? That's right. He's playing in the AHL for the Henderson Silver Knights. And so maybe he'll eventually have more of an NHL career, but I kind of don't think so. And I eventually came around to that after seeing him with the Sharks. And I said last year, I don't think this guy's an NHL player. And he's probably not long term. Because what is he worth? If you have to, if someone's offense is really not that special, but that's mainly what they can do, and you have to insulate him in all of the situations, that's a pain in the ass for the coach and not a super big benefit, right? Were you with me on that, Pete?
I was kind of ahead of you on this one, I'm afraid. I was never a fan of Kalen Addison. His offense didn't really pop enough for me, and he didn't have a lot of size, so he didn't have a lot of peripheral value, and there were some red flags with his defense. So, yeah, I kind of steered clear of him. But some of the other guys you mentioned that he was drafted in and around in that first round, very interesting players there as well. Dobson, I really loved. I wasn't quite as sold on Bouchard. I wasn't totally convinced that he was going to translate to what he has become in the NHL. I was just a little bit worried about his speed and hockey sense. Ryan Merkley, though, that's got to be the most interesting name out of the whole bunch there. And we've touched on him a few times before. That was the Dallas draft. I remember it really well. And I was talking to someone who's been on the show a few times and knows Doug Wilson and spoke to Doug, who drafted him, and they were convinced that they could make a player out of him, that they were going to get their hands on him and that they were going to develop him, because no one questioned his hockey sense and offensive upside and his skating abilities. Those were all like way above elite level, but it's just the warts in his game were so bad. Thinking that you can get a player like that and change him, it's like when girls are like, "Oh, I really like that guy, but I can change him. I can make him stop cheating. He'll be my boyfriend and he'll stop cheating when he dates me." Nuh-uh. It doesn't work like that.
That is such a good and funny analogy. Like, oh, he cheated on his girlfriend to be with me, but he won't cheat on me. That's a really good analogy. And also it reminds me, I was the how I want trying to remember how many years ago this was. I think it was probably like 2020 or maybe it was really early. And I was in a chat with a bunch of guys, and Cam Robinson popped in one day, and it was just like, I just came in to say Ryan Merkley is really not that good. And he just like dropped that bomb and left. And we're all like, what? And this is when everyone was losing their mind about how good Ryan Merkley was and how he's going to be the next Cale Makar.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I keep thinking about that because that was like the first time and it took me a long time to believe that. It was like, really? Everyone else is saying how good he is. And it was like, nope, Cam was right all along. He really was not that good. And what's he doing now playing in the KHL?
Yeah. Well, if you that's the risk you run when you scout and evaluate players by looking at their stat lines and highlight reels on Twitter. Like, yeah, he put up a lot of points, and when he scored, it was beautiful. Like, he was dancing through teams, end-to-end rushes, deking goalies out of their jock straps and putting it in the empty net. Like, yes, he could do all those things frequently. But when he wasn't doing those things, it was a goddamn train wreck. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked on Ryan Merkley here. Yeah, no, but Kalen Addison, I never really fell in love with him. So I let other people draft him, and in and around the range where he was drafted in the NHL, which was too rich for my blood. I passed on that and got lucky on that one.
As my friend Lewis Ezekiel once said, it's not Kalen Addison, it's Kalen Dropison.
Do like that. That's all right. That's all right. Yeah, but on the other side of the coin, that brings me a nice segue to my next player. Players who we got wrong in our evaluations.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
Jason Robertson makes my list, and I'll tell you why. So we all know Jason Robertson. He's a very good hockey player for the Dallas Stars. 2015 pick by the Kingston Frontenacs in the OHL draft. They got him in the fourth round. So not that's pretty late. That's not a lot of draft pedigree backing him up. He had 32 points as a rookie, which is good. Not great, but pretty good actually for a 16-year-old in the OHL. And his draft year, he jumped to 81 points. He was ranked pretty consistently across the board. Bob McKenzie had him 32. The Dauber Prospects boys had him sorry, Bob had him at 20, 30. Dauber Prospects boys had him at 22. But overall, he was pretty consistently a late first round, early second round pick. And he fell to the second round, 39th overall by Dallas. So, personally, I was much higher on him, but I thought I could let him slide in the fantasy draft. I had picks 5 and 18 in the draft that year. And I was planning on taking him at 18, and he ended up going 17th, which hurt. His D plus one season was about the same as his draft year. He didn't really pop very much there. But his final season in the CHL, he led the league in scoring, and he has quickly developed into an elite player in the NHL. So what kept him out of the first round was, we've talked about this many times as well, his skating held him back. Quite frankly, in his first season, it was terrible. But his hockey sense was well above average, as was his puck skills and shooting, and his ability to create offense was well above average as well. He reminds me a lot, or Jacob Pataglia, I should say, reminds me a lot of Jason Robertson, and a lot of similarities in what I'm seeing. What did I learn from all of this, Victor? When you have a guy you really like and want in your fantasy draft, but he's ranked lower than you think, or was drafted lower than you're projecting him, don't risk picking him around there or later in the draft and getting that air quotes great value pick. If you really want the guy, just pick him the first chance you get. If that means fifth overall, do it. I wish I would have picked him fifth overall. It would have been a great pick. I would look like a genius. Wouldn't have been great value. It would have been good value. But I would have got my guy. The other lesson I learned from this, and this one is probably a little bit more to the point, is not to be influenced by home team biases. I watched a lot of France games and saw a lot of Jason Robertson, and I became a fan. And although I was overvaluing him, recognizing your bias and understanding how to make correct evaluation decisions and judgments is a really big part of scouting. And when you watch a certain team over and over again, you see those same players over and over again, it's easy to become a fan and kind of lose perspective on how, yeah, okay, so he's one of the best players on the team that I watch all the time. Does that mean that this team is terrible and he's one of the best players in the league, or this is a great team and he's just one of the great players on it and he's just a good player in this league, or something to that effect? So being able to see the forest through the trees, I guess, maybe. It's kind of my take on that. What's your overall thought on me including Jason Robertson on this list?
Well, I think it's great. It's nice to have some actually really good players to talk about and not
Yeah.
just like guys that didn't make it.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like I can take it a little bit of a victory lap on Robertson, although I can't say I was that high on him as early as that. But I remember a lot of people weren't really talking about him, and when his brother came around, everyone was talking about how Nick Robertson was, so good. And I would always say that I preferred Jason Robertson the Greater, as I would often refer to him. And Jason and Nick Robertson is the lesser. And people got really mad at me for a long time about that, because there were a lot of Leaf fans who were really high on Nick Robertson, and maybe not so much anymore, even though he's finally kind of coming around a little bit. But, I think that when you look at, yeah, the skating, when you look at some of the things, it's hard to see through some of those glaring deficiencies, but you look at the positive and yeah, he's just so smart, great shot, and there's a lot of really big positives there. And a lot of his analytics looked really good, even though there were some glaring deficiencies. So I was generally pretty high on Jason Robertson, early adopter. I got him in a few leagues that were a little bit more shallow, and he was basically just not even drafted, because he was a kind of mid second round pick. So in some shallower leagues, like, people weren't even interested in him. So that was kind of lucky that I was able to get him there. But yeah, he's an interesting one. I think there's some good lessons learned there, like you said, putting aside your biases. Also, there's a bit of just going to get your guy, if you're high on him, and all things being sort of equal, there's nothing wrong with quote unquote reaching a little bit, because as we say, and as NHL teams talk about, usually unless you have multiple picks, you only leave with one pick in that round. And whatever your list says doesn't really matter. You're leaving with that one pick. So you kind of pick the one, go with the one that you feel more comfortable with or that you're sure about.
Yeah, I mean, part of the appeal of being in fantasy hockey is having players on your team that you're a fan of, that you really like, right? And that makes your fantasy team fun. And watching your player that you love, having him score and having him contribute to your fantasy roster, it's like double bonus. And then there's other people who are, in the scouting world doing player evaluations for not their fantasy roster, for real rosters or for career credibility. And you got to be really careful with your hometown bias in those situations. And you probably don't want to reach on ranking guys higher just because you really like them. Try to keep that into perspective.
Definitely.
All right, your next guy.
Alex Barré-Boulet.
Oh yeah, you and everybody else.
This was, I was so high on ABB for a long time. 5'10", a winger, which partially explains why he was never drafted, even though he was an absolute beast in the QMJHL, putting up tons of points. Go look at his Elite Prospects page. Player of the year, rookie of the year, MVP, MVP, rookie of the year. Just, he was rookie of the year in the AHL. He was a player of the year in the CHL. He was a QMJHL MVP. Like, just some incredible stuff. Like, he's clearly a very good player. Eventually, Tampa signed him and he killed it in the AHL, which is part of what I was excited about. But I think, again, thinking back on this a little bit, he was a little bit older during his time when he got there. So that maybe is something that is a good lesson learned there. He was nearly over a point per game for two seasons in the AHL. Then 2020-21, he finally got some time with Tampa. 3 points in 15 games. Didn't go super well. But I remember thinking, he just needs better deployment because he wasn't getting time with, you know, Stamkos, Point, Kucherov. And so I was thinking, he just gets better deployment, he'll be good. Because defensively, he was actually quite good during that time. He just wasn't creating much. But he was also playing with, you know, third and fourth liners. So I was like, okay, he'll be all right. And then he gets waived. It's like, okay, here we go. Then he goes over to the Kraken. And I thought, okay, Kraken are going to be smart. They're going to put him in a good position. And he's going to show us all who he is. Well, apparently he did, but it went not in a good way. He didn't really show much there with Seattle. Then he went back to Tampa. They waived him. Kraken waived him, went back to Tampa. They claimed him. Didn't really give him much of a shot. And then finally, 23-24, he got 36 NHL games. And here's the kicker. He played 77% of his shifts with Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point. That amounted to 9 points in 36 games. To me, that was the nail in the coffin. Like, he's apparently just not that good. But it took a while to get there. And when I looked at his Rampum charts then, defensively he was poor. Offensively, he wasn't creating. So I'm not really sure what lesson to learn from this, other than he's just one of those guys that was a tweener. And he didn't show as much massive promise early on, other than his really strong Q production. But some of the production stagnated a little bit early on. And then when he did really kill it in the AHL, he was a little bit older. I'm not really sure that there was a whole lot there. I think there's maybe some nuance that some pro scouts could elaborate on, but I don't know how much I learned there, other than I do know that smaller guys need and don't get as many shots, and it might take them a little bit longer to get that legit shot. And so anyways, I think it took us a little bit longer to really find out who Alex Barrett-Boulet was. And it turns out, my opinion, he's just a tweener. And it's kind of unfortunate because I thought there was more promise for him all along. And I definitely hyped him up a little bit too much during that AHL time, thinking that, you know, just get him with Cooch and Point and he'll be, you know, he'll be a point per game player, but clearly not, Pete.
You know what made that one really, really tricky for me anyways, is to your point, he was signed by Tampa Bay as a undrafted, undersized, prolific offensive winger. And at that point, Tampa Bay had a pretty good track record of signing guys that fit that MO. Tyler Johnson, Yanni Gourde. There's a couple more. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. And so this is like the next guy.
Cirelli? Wasn't Cirelli one of those?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. There's more too. St. Louis. So like this was the next guy of that mold. Like he was the next one. So I was on board for him too. Wasn't really too concerned about the 5'10" size. You know, I guess the difference between him and the other players that I just mentioned were the ability to play at the pace of the NHL level. That's the only thing I could think of, because he's such a prolific offensive scorer at every level, but the NHL it's the pace. He just can't handle the pace, because he scores at the American Hockey League level, and that's just as big as the NHL, right? Those are grown men playing pro hockey, and it's fast, but it's not as fast as the NHL. So I think that's where I lost perspective on him, is I was comparing him to all the other players that team signed. And one of the last things he said there was, you're hoping that he just needed to play with Stamkos or Point or Kucherov. If you ever have a player and you're thinking, if he plays with Crosby or if he plays with Bedard, he'll be great, don't draft him. Because if he doesn't play with those players, what is he? Draft him based on what he is. Even if he doesn't play with those guys, is he valuable? Then pick him. But if you're counting on him to play, like, how many players have people targeted because they were going to play with Crosby in Pittsburgh? Like, how many wingers did Crosby go through? Like 11 billion, and like two of them panned out. So I think that's a big mistake, that if you were counting on him playing with those big guns, that was a mistake, but you apparently realized it when he did play with them and still didn't produce.
Yep. Oh boy, who's your next one?
Well, I didn't prep another one, but I have a couple other names, and I'll let you choose who we talk about. So, some guys off the top of my head that I missed on or overvalued were David Cotton. I had him in multiple leagues, and I held on him for seasons. Arnie Talvidi, I had him for a hot minute. Tyson Jost was a top 10 pick, and I was really high on him. I had him for a while. Lucas Edmonds, another Kingston Frontenacs player. We kind of talked about a lot of the things that went wrong with him on this episode with other players, and Ozzie Weisblatt, San Jose Sharks prospect. Which one of those is the most interesting to you?
I think they're all interesting in their own way, but Cotton is definitely one who I was interested too because he always seemed to produce at that other, at the, I think it was the AHL level. Unless I'm thinking of the wrong guy. But yeah, it was just one of those that was just stuck in between, and it was like kept thinking like, oh, it's gonna happen. And it did not.
Yeah, I didn't spend a lot on him other than roster time. I got him late in the draft, and I just held on to him and held on to him and held on to him because he had like 50 goals in high school or something like that. And then he went to the NCAA, and he was good in the NCAA. The guy's a beast, right? He's huge. He moves around the ice pretty well. He seems to have pretty good hands. He's got a cannon of a shot. So my expectations weren't that this was going to be the next Erik Lindros, but this was going to be, a bottom six player that could produce a little bit of offense and use his size and physicality to round out his value, and that I'd have an NHL player who I could put in my roster when he made it on an ELC contract, and then he would check off multiple categories for me, not in an outrageous pace or anything like that, but he would get me a hit a game or a block a game or a fight or an assist and the occasional goal or shorthanded point, maybe win some faceoffs because he's a center. So I was in for that, and yeah, he just never really panned out. I don't think he barely made it in the American Hockey League after college. So
Yeah, you're right. I was thinking of Alex Cotton, but that's okay.
well, he was good too, but he wasn't one of the guys I ever rostered. But yeah, no, I was all in on David Cotton. I had him in multiple teams, and I held on to him for like his whole 4 year NCAA college career and a year of American Hockey League too, until I finally pulled the plug. And I was like, look, he's 25, and he's nowhere closer to the NHL than when I originally had him on my roster. It's not happening. Time to sell. Tyson Jost really disappointed me. He was amazing
Yeah.
for Canada. He had a lot going for him that I liked. I thought, he's not the biggest guy, but I thought he could produce at a middle six pace and get a lot of minutes and be a very versatile player, a player that coaches would like. I thought he had leadership qualities. I just thought there was so much more there, and he has made it to the NHL. He's just not been very impactful anywhere that he's played. So I sold on him a long time ago, and I haven't dwelled on that too much. But and then I'm not really sure why I went wrong with Tyson Jost. He was a top 10 pick, and I picked him in
Yeah.
around that range at 1.2, and it just hasn't come to fruition consistently at the NHL. Well, I guess it has, just not in a good way consistently at the NHL level. What do you think of Jost?
Yeah, that was one for me too. And I mean, I'm always skeptical of the guys that come out of the BCHL because you just have to be so exceptional. And he was. But I think the other thing that really was hard to gauge is that he was also awesome in his first, he went straight from the BCHL to the NCAA and was awesome. And wasn't Ken Johnson like that? Or maybe I'm misremembering, but
Couple guys have done it.
there's been a few guys that have been able to do that. It's really difficult though to make that massive jump. And he looked great, right stepping into that NCAA role. And it was like, okay, like I'm starting to change my mind here. And then he went straight from there to the NHL. And it was like, oh, wow. So that massive jump is like really, really difficult. And yeah, Ken Johnson was another one, BCHL, although he did a couple years at Michigan. And I think one thing that I learned is that sometimes those massive jumps are really not good for the player, you know. And I think you could argue that maybe this is just who Jost was all along, but I kind of feel like the jump going BCHL, NCAA, NHL is like too much in 3 seasons. Like you kind of need a little bit more marination time. You need to work on your game. You need to kind of round things out a little bit. And I feel like he didn't quite ever do that, you know, and I think the rest of his career is kind of suffering a little bit from that, perhaps, or maybe he just was never that good. But I struggle to believe that because he showed along the way in many different ways that he is. So, yeah, sometimes people get really excited when guys progress really quickly through the levels, but that isn't necessarily a good thing.
Too much too soon. Guys don't get ruined playing an extra year at lower levels and dominating and going up the ascending up the ranks in a timely development manner is a good strategy. Do you got another guy?
Yeah, I have one more that I think is worth talking about. This is someone reminded me about, and that's Cole Sillinger. So Sillinger, 12th overall pick by Columbus back in 2021, and that was a little bit of a weird, you know, season with some shortened COVID time. And so it was a little bit abbreviated, 46 points in 31 games. So you're like, okay. So maybe you don't know too much about that. But then he went straight from that to the NHL. And it was like, whoa, okay. So that's impressive. And he's the son of Mike Sillinger. So he had the pedigree. It's like, okay, you can start to explain some of this. You can start to say about, you know, he knew about what it was to be a pro and, you know, kind of had a more mature game, which was true. He certainly did. And, you know, going USHL to NHL, we talked about going from BCHL to NCAA to NHL. Going from the USHL straight to the NHL is bananas. That is a massive, massive jump. And I got really excited about 31 points in 79 games. I was like, yeah, that's really exciting. He was getting, you know, pretty decent minutes for a rookie that was, you know, just straight out of the draft. So I think, you know, thinking like, okay, well, if he can do that, then he can probably take even further steps. But to the previous point, it doesn't work that way often. And I think he, you know, he quote unquote regressed hard, or he just had to learn all those lessons and really round out his game in the NHL, which led to 42 points in his next 143 NHL games, which was really rough. And basically being around a 25 point pace player is really not anything to be excited about. Now he seems like he maybe have gotten back to a decent level at this point that we're recording. He's on a 60-point pace, 8 points in 11 games. That might shift quite a bit, but his ice time is coming up. His underlying metrics are looking better. But I think this is one of those cases where he was really miscast. You know, he was on a really weak team, and he made the team in kind of a role that probably wasn't right for him and probably was never going to be his, but it was kind of what they needed at the time. And I think he was punching above his weight class and he did admirably, but he was never really going to be that top line center. I think he was going to be more of a middle to bottom six guy, but it's just kind of what the position they put him in. And some of the numbers made it look a little bit more exciting and got a little bit more excited about that. Just because he could do so much at that level doesn't mean he was necessarily going to progress to greater heights. And so I think Cole Sillinger isn't going to be a total bust, but you know, pretty much anyone who drafted him and got excited after that first season probably doesn't roster him now because it was such a rough patch. They probably dropped him or traded him or whatever. I was one of those people. I had him for a while and I was like, no, I can't even. This is too painful. You know, he's already at 231 games played. So unless you're in a league that allows you to hold him for 200 games or something, you probably aren't reaping the benefit of what he's doing now. What was your take on Cole at the time? I remember thinking really surprised, like, how is this 12th overall pick in the NHL? That was very confusing.
He exceeded my expectations from his draft season. I didn't have a huge file on him because of the path that he took coming from the USHL. So when he made the NHL, I was like, wow, really? And not only did he make the NHL, like he kind of hit the ground running, right? He was really good in his first season there. And the bottom's kind of fallen out. I think more of the too much too soon sort of thing. And a lot of people would have not wanted to sell on his stock in his first season in the NHL, but that would have been the smart play to do, to sell him when his value is high. In hindsight, I suppose, anyways. Yeah, no, I don't really have too much to add to Cole Sillinger, man. That was your last player?
Yeah, that was my last one. I mean, feel free to tell us about other guys we
Oh,
led you
yeah.
astray on and that we messed up. I'm sure you can remember those. And well, happy to do this again. Hopefully we provided something that we can all learn from and get better at this. I mean, I certainly think that the more you do this, I would hope that those misses and whiffs are less and less common and that we're a little bit wiser, but you never know.
Fewer and farther between, hopefully. But yeah, if you've got other players you want to let us know that we missed on, the complaint line is open. You can reach out to us at DPR_show, at Farling, and at Victor Nuno 12. And producer Jim is at Jim IKEHW. Don't forget to follow HockeyPodNet. There's a whole bunch of other good shows there you can listen to. And wherever you're listening to this, go ahead and hit that subscribe and like button, and then follow up with a 5-star review. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and share it on socials. Let some other people find it. We really appreciate that. And we will be back with episode 81 next week. Until then, keep your stick on the ice, folks.